The Vox Markets Podcast.
It's 12 o'clock. Welcome to Ticker Stock. It is Thursday. What is it? 12th of October. God, we're whipping through this year. 2023. I'm joined by Papa Jacket John, not Cashmere John today. Have we had a revisit of the Cashmere John? I think we should have a bell and a cashmere jumper worn at the bottom of the market, Johnny boy.
Yeah, it's been warm. Today is the first day it's been chilly, really, for a while.
Okay. Well, I want a little bell and your cashmere. Diggity-dee! That's the button, guys. It's in. Let's go for it. John. Yeah, anyway, listen, if you are watching, thank you for joining us. And listen, you guys and gals, if you join us right now at the bottom of the market, when we're in the pit of despair, you'll be the winners in the long term because, you're sticking in there. And I always say to my kids, quitters don't win, winners don't quit. You've got to keep researching, you've got to keep the cash on the side, ready for when the market turns. It will turn. It will turn. We know that. The only question is when. John, are you bearish or bullish, generally?
Bearish.
Okay. Why then? We're at the bottom of the market.
Well, you keep saying that.
You're right. And this is a good reason to look at charts. And in fact, when you are at the bottom of the market, there's no saying you can't go further down. And in fact, there's a commented yesterday on the indices there saying, I'm buying some Forterra. Let's look at the AIM all share. Here we go.
Yeah.
By all means, join in, everyone. Are you bullish or bearish? Give a reason. You don't have to. If you've never commented before, that's an easy little comment for you. Bullish or bearish? Just tap in the comments below there. But this is the AIM all share index. Wow, we may get an update here today, John. That's phenomenal. We haven't had two in a row since last month, but we may get an update. Are we from oversold? No, we're still nearly. I think we are. Oh, we are just ticking above that 30 level there. So we are on that. But one of the commentators yesterday, I'm buying more. Dare you go buy in cheap? You gotta get it. But I would say be careful because it's gone down and it's low doesn't mean it can't go down lower. Like I said, if you'd bought here and it would gone down further. So when you look at a chart can only be in three states. It can either be in a uptrend, downtrend, or in a range. Try and avoid the downtrend. That's all you need to do. A range is not so bad, especially if you've been paid a dividend. So why are you bearish, John? I'm not talking about the economy now. That's two different things. Economy.
I keep hearing this. I don't accept that the economy and the stock market are two different things. I mean, SIG today, which provides insulation, has had an absolute shocker of a profit warning. So what do we have? We had a trading update. Its shares trading. Its shares are up 11% today, and so the economic effect, of a slowdown in the housing construction market, had not been fully priced into shares. So when that comes out, when that statement comes out, and we see that there's a profit downgrade, it's the real economy coming through the stock market in a way that hadn't yet been priced in. So I don't accept that the two things do not have a fairly direct relationship.
Yes, but I refer the honourable gentleman to the answer I gave yesterday, which is if you're in a doubt, if a company's in a sector where you think it's having weakness, don't jump in before results. Let the results come out or the trading updates come out, because that's when you'll see, what's actually happening. And in fact, if you look at the stats here, there's some GDP out today. If you look here on the screen. In fact, Rick's house price is down. This is what was forecast. This is what was forecast. This is previous. Minus 68. That means the amount of surveyors or people selling, so the prices are lower than they were before. So 69% of people say they're lower. And look at that. 63% was predicted. It's down lower than that. So anything in red is lower. Now, GDP month on month, it was flat, pretty much from a minus last month. But look at industrial production. Look at that. Experts, way off again. It was more than three times contracting than they thought. Minus 0.7%. And even manufacturing production month on month, double as bad as they thought, minus 0.8, and we got GDP. But GDP is a bit lagging, and we've had PMIs, in fact, these are PMIs down here, and they're contracting. So we know the GDP, we are in recession. We are.
We're on a cusp,
Yeah, you just said there, hobbling along.
Yeah.
It reminds me, our economy at the moment reminds me of my next door neighbor, Daphne, all right, who's 90 years of age, but she does get out on a Zimmer walking frame. Every day, she walks up to the hut pub around the corner there, And then she comes back and I said, well done. And she always tells me, if I ask her how she is, she actually tells me how she is, every ailment possible. And I said, what is she getting out there? At least you're getting out there, Daphne. That's the that's the UK economy at the moment. It's hobbling along up the bus stop and back. It's not doing much. But I think we are all in recession,
I mean,
but,
talking of bus stop, I mean, you know, Mobico, which was the old National Express business, again, you know, it's a big company. Yeah. It's shocking.
Yeah,
28% down those shares right now.
Yeah. Let me just get that up here. I just want to move this. Okay. Yeah. In fact, let's go to the front page here of Vox. And we'll scroll down to the section here, which is quite a good little section worth looking at. And let me just get rid of this. I've got something on the side of my screen that's annoying me. Sorry, I apologize. Okay. Right. Scroll down. And we got the most followed. Right here, Mass has been there for a while. I don't know why that's been followed. It's a small little company that does energy and stuff. Watkin Jones, people jumping, look on these 49ers. Stop doing that, ladies and gentlemen. Wait for the trend as your friend.
Watkin Jones numbers were horrible as well.
Yeah, horrible. Yeah. Vactor's rallying nice strongly. We're looking at the chart that a bit. But so fallers, we're looking forwards, yeah. So Mobico, again, you got to ask, why do companies change their name?
To National Express, yeah. I mean, what was National Express? It's a lot of his business is now outside of the UK.
Okay.
School buses in America.
Yeah.
And I think it's got 30% of operations in Spain as well. But yeah, so, you know, this is a horror of a statement.
Yeah.
An absolute horror. Suspended the dividend. Profits massively impacted by higher costs. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's horrendous.
There's no reason, you know, beyond sort of June 2022, why you got into this. Just look at this. Let's take the 50-day moving average off. That's a 200-day moving average. Okay, a couple of fake breaks, and they broke lower. And then look at that. All the way down. And all of a sudden, a death by 1,000 cuts. And then finally, the final sort of, you know, slash there of the cut. And you're down there. Yeah, it's awful. Like I said, that's why you should never jump in stocks because you think they're good value and they're getting cheaper, because they can get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, but then results come out. You think, in fact, they're not that cheap because their earnings aren't that good. So that's a little bit of a worry there. So, yeah, SHI. Some comments from yesterday quickly. Let's go through them. Craig says, I was listening to an interview with Rosemary Banyard, manager of Downing Unique Opportunities Fund. Rosemary was praising diploma management incentive bonus structure to maintain the return on capital employed. Companies with good management incentives to encourage great stewardship might be a good topic of conversation. Yeah, but how much in depth do you research, though? I mean, do you get the point where you look at actually the pay structure of a company? I tend to, it's an after sort of bit of research for me. I'll tend to look into it. Once I've looked at all the fundamentals and all that stuff, then I will look at the final results and look at how they're paid and all that stuff. But it's not a huge, a massive priority on my research.
But I mean, I do think, you know, you want to see sort of executive pay restraint. You know, these are often, you know, stewards of companies, not founders, not owners. You know, sometimes you wonder why, you know, the levels of pay are what they are. So you want to see some kind of restraint. You know, you want to see incentives aligned. So, you know, you want the shareholders and the management to be working towards the same target.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't see it. So, you know, governance matters. Out of the, you know, the acronym ESG, it's the thing that really drives performance. It's the G thing. It does matter. I mean, it's probably, you know, sort of slightly lower down the list, you know, once you've satisfied yourself that, you know, a company has other attributes that you want, but it does matter. It's worth looking at as a sort of final hurdle.
Yeah. Laconic said, I said, winners don't quit, quitters don't win. Smokers are quitters that win. Yes.
Really?
I don't give that example to my sons. Dad, I don't like smoking these cigarettes. You crack on, son. You'll never be so successful. You'll never get up to 50 packs a day unless you get crack on. No, I don't give him that. Paul is bullish. In a dismal market, SGE chart is beautiful. 30% in the last 6 months. SGE, let's have a look at that. SGE, what is this? Sage Group. Oh, okay. Yes, that is. Let's have a look at that. Sage, that is good looking chart. Yeah, look at that. That's, look at that. Yeah, it's a bit carried on. Look at that up there. It's Danny's with that up. breaking up, and that's nice. Look, way above 200 moving average there. In fact, a little too aggressive, but yeah, it's a good-looking chart, that Sage. Absolutely.
Good company.
Was a couple of the comments here. Yeah, Steve said, I'm buying Forterra at these levels. You need to think long-term, re-housing supply demand in the UK. I understand that. What I'm saying is, it doesn't hurt to look in the chart and wait for the change, because you could be sitting on a paper loss for a long time and it can get bigger and bigger and bigger and it can be quite painful. So what I'm saying is just do a bit of timing more. And I'm not talking about, you know, daily-to-day trading. What I'm saying is just wait for the trend to change from a downtrend. Make sure you're not in a downtrend. That's the important thing to avoid. Canervy, oh, no, sorry.
As I say, SIG's today makes me, you know, again, it sort of reinforces my concerns about building materials.
Yeah, but hang on. So, like I said yesterday, John, that how much those kind of companies can go lower. But we've also already seen, you know, recessions. The market tends to rally when a recession is finally announced, pretty much. And we haven't had the official stamp on it. But if you look at the last couple of recessions, look at AIM. If we haven't been heading towards a recession, what's it pricing in? It knows that. It's been doing it for 2 years. It's one of the longest bear markets we've ever seen.
I think what AIM is pricing in is worries about liquidity. When I say liquidity, I don't mean sort of share volumes. I mean liquidity in terms of balance sheet strength.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of worries about lots of companies and their funding position.
But how much for the pricing? Because it's down 47% now. And that's even including the winners. You know, so it's down. Convergy says, oh, you do read my comments. Thanks for mentioning my name. Fame at last. So I use fundamental value analysis. This person said yesterday that value is better than growth. I said, no, you need both growth and value. Don't leave. You just pair two together and it helps a lot, because just growth in the zone is not good, or value in the zone.
It depends what you mean by value. You know, and I think, you know, value means lots of different things to lots of different people. But I think if you interpret value as valuation, then it matters, and you need to understand growth in the context of valuation as well.
Yeah, it's also good to look at future forecasts as well to know what value generation is going to be created. Hopefully, of course, they are. You know, I've seen many broker forecasts be wrong, but you know, it's good to see the potential and the margins, all that stuff. See, so where you are they achieving growth? If they achieve this growth, you know, over the next 3 years, will their value, you know, appreciate, and to what level? That's so. Yeah. So he says, I use technical chart analysis. When to buy stocks and all that. Good channel. I enjoy listening to your daily commentary whilst walking my dog, which is nice to hear. But Johnny, in fact, there's a good point here from, let's have a look. Sean, we're closer to the bottom than we are to the top. That's a certainty.
Yeah.
And you'll never know when you're at the top or bottom. Yeah, we will do, because John will wear a cashmere T-shirt, cashmere vest, and ring a bell. I think as investors, sometimes we do get into a bearish sentiment at the bottom of the market because all the gloomy news is out there. When in fact, if you'd flip that sentiment, you'd do well. If you were bearish at the top, at new highs, pretty much, you know, a little bit worried, taking a little profit off, it wouldn't hurt you. Now, if you're buying a little bit more at the bottom of good companies, it probably wouldn't hurt you either longer term. So we do need to flip our psychology a little bit, but you've got to be obviously careful. Simon, bearish, maybe 6 months to the bottom. How do you know this? I'm sort of in agreement with that. I think we're not far at the bottom, but I think a Q2 next year will be fully almost into a bull market. That is 20% up from the lows. That's what I think. Steve, I would never normally go for falling shares. However, Mobico is an opportunity, still on track to be 2x EBIT. I would, Steve, it's a downtrend, fella. Be careful you don't hurt yourself there.
I mean, I just think, what are its costs? You know, what are the costs of this company? And you've got two main costs, drivers and petrol.
Yeah.
You know, diesel. I still think there's inflationary pressures that are lurking, particularly around those two things. So, yeah, I mean, and it talks about, you know, it's basically really trying to, you know, rekindle profitability and struggling. So yeah. I don't know.
We've said this before, turnarounds and, you know, things, you know, restructuring is going to take a lot longer than you thought. Full recovery in profitability taking longer to deliver, decisive action being taken on our cost base and accelerate. And now what you have to understand, it may bounce, but until you get more news, what's the market going to think of that? They're going to think, it's not going to plan. So I wouldn't be ultimately bullish on that short term, because who's bullish on that? Apart from jumping in fact, you said there, Steve, but generally the market, are they going to be bullish on that? It's not going to plan, is it? Mm. You know?
I can't remember who said it. It was an analyst who once said to me, you know, never invest in businesses that are move people around. You know, so that's, that's basically airlines, bus groups, train groups.
Yeah, true.
It's a nightmare.
What about cars, Tesla?
Well, it's slightly, different, but we talked about car, massively capital intensive. So not, you know, again, not a particularly exciting business model. Tesla might be slightly different. Some people have sort of suggested that's more of a software company than a car company.
Well, that's suggested by valuations, I suppose.
But traditionally, the car industry has been a nightmare to navigate for investors as well.
There's Mars. This Mars is what is the most followed. I don't know what Mars does. We should look at it. But as you can see there, it's spiked up again, and breaking 200-day moving average now. So it's almost forming its bottom here. A nice looking chart, though, people will like this, is Avacta, and strength continues. Like I said, I put a couple of lines on there where, you know, previous support and resistance are. For some reason, it spiked up there and come back down. But now it's on the way to do that. Now you see, can it get above this level? That's what you need to see, not just a temporary spike up. But nevertheless, you know, buying begets buying. And so that's why you should never sort of, buy in a downtrend, because selling begets selling too. And so it can carry on for a longer period. What's the saying? The market can sell off for a lot longer than you can stay liquid for.
No, momentum in both directions is a very powerful factor in returns.
Look at restaurant group, by the way, Rises. They take over bid.
So this is, I guess, the one area of the UK market that I am sort of erring to the sides of bullishness. It goes back to the point about value and valuation, is that, you know, the UK market is very cheap. You know, they're arguably for a reason, but certainly compared to, you know, other markets around the world, the UK is bargain basement territory.
Yeah.
And that really sort of suggests that, you know, at some point, you know, that will reverse. You'll get mean reversion. To something that's, you know, more normal levels of valuation. But in the meantime, you know, you'll see things like this happening.
Mm-hmm. Oddly, it's come down for a long way. You know, we've come down from, in fact, we've gone back. Wow, look at that. It's come down from, what, £5 down to, since 2016, this is, by the way. But it's come down to literally 30 pence or below that. But even now, look, even that fall, this is what I'm saying, Steve, the two Steves actually, talking about buying shares on the downtrend. This, you could have bought this anywhere in this level here, and you'd have been wrong. Look at the 200-day moving average, if you look at nothing else. Look at that. Breakout there, previous high, broke up 200-day moving average, and then now, it's bottoming there, and now it's having a takeover bid, it's doubled.
I thought this was the case. So, you know, Restaurant Group has been a struggler for some time, you know. Its main business for a long time was Frankie and Benny's. I don't think I've ever set foot in a Frankie's and Benny's, I have to say.
I have, unfortunately, with the kids, yeah. Oh, I'm glad now my kids are not that age where they want to go to Frankie and Benny's anymore.
But it was flailing. Chiquito's is a Mexican brand as well.
Yeah.
Really, really wasn't doing very well. And so they, to kind of spark growth, they bought Wagamama. And they spent $559 million on Wagamama.
Yeah.
And now the whole group, even after today's jump, is worth $370 million.
Yeah, and that's probably Wagamama, because I quite like Wagamama. It's fine, apart from the benches and stuff. I don't want to sit with other people on benches. I'm an adult. I am. I'm 52. I don't want to sit in a bench with some. I don't want to share someone looking at them eating their food. I just want a bit of my own privacy when I'm my own food. Get rid of the benches, for heaven's sake.
Wagamama is a good business. It's, you know, if this, despite your dislike of benches, it's always busy.
Generally, I don't want to share the table with my kids, essentially. I definitely don't want to share it with other strangers.
This value destruction here is it's quite something. But you know, that's an opportunity for private equity. Private equity, presumably, you know, we sold Restaurant Group Wagamama in the first place to come back in. So, what they talk about in the statement, which I think is very interesting, is they talk about, you know, to get back on track, it has to be done away from public markets where patient capital can do its work.
They're not looked at under the fine light.
They're begging a bargain. Private equity don't spend their money without doing their homework. They are begging a bargain.
Let's look at something. Most readily, actually, it's obviously just a holdings report, but this is Helicon Investments. It's horizontally minerals. Looks like they've taken a few off the table, I think, by the looks of it, from 9 to 8.8. What's the chart? I mean, I'm assuming it hasn't bounced because they still have this funding issue hanging over their heads. And yeah, like I said, there was a falling knife trade. Look at that. Out of all that, pretty much, there's one chance of falling knife trade. And they went back down on the chart there. But try to avoid those if you can. Chilled Brands product launched on Amazon. I really don't get this. I don't understand. I think nicotine free vapes. There's now more regulation coming in about this, and more pressure regulation coming about this.
Well, yeah, but there was a big speech yesterday. Yesterday from Wes Streeting, who's the Shadow Health Secretary at the Labour Party conference. And yeah, I mean, if they get in, they're going after the vaping companies. It was pretty much what he said.
Yeah. I said there's a huge amount of competition in this market. There's market leaders in there like Lost Mary and Elf Bar, which I think Supreme have the rights to sell in this country, don't they, or something?
They do, yeah. They do.
So out of the two, I'd say Supreme is a better player because they're also diversified. I don't get it really. I mean, Amazon, better choice than Amazon.
What I did notice though is that they've got a very broad range of products, chilled brands, and including which is quite extraordinary. Low alcohol or non-alcohol, an IPA, tinged with functional mushrooms.
I wouldn't mind it was a functional mushroom. What do they do as a function?
A functional mushroom. I'd never heard the expression, but apparently they can produce effects beyond the nutritional value of the mushrooms themselves.
Well, do you know what? I'm now interested in chilled brands. They've sparked my interest for that product. That's a bit more creative and imaginative than a non-zero vape.
£33.60 for 12.
Upland Resources is the third most read. It's basically a letter they've got here. I don't mean to be cynical, but I suppose you've got it's a letter of intention. It's important. So anyway, they have now signed a letter of intent for the provision of well planning and drilling services. I don't know if they market like this or what, but so Upland, at least they're progressing anyway. Upland there, so there we are. Nice little. You can see there already. You know the big rise there, and then a bit of support there. What I need to do now is what are you going to do? I disappeared there, did you? Needs to get above that level there, pretty much. What's on the front page, John?
What
are we coming?
What have we got today? Windward.
Windward. Yeah, well, they're one of the risers, actually.
Windward. Yeah, big-ish rise. Nice company. This we've spoken about this area before. They're basically maritime data systems. They work with governments and you know, commercial shipping organisations and that kind of thing. They work with the London Stock Exchange on sort of sanctions busting. Lots of it's all this maritime domain awareness stuff that I've talked about before. And Windward's slightly different because they sort of do it all with AI.
Yeah.
But basically, there was a budgeting cycle in the US for government contracts, and a lot of these contracts would be expected to land in the second half of Windward's financial year, and they have. Really steady progress there, growing pretty quickly. Revenues of about 25 million dollars this year, and then profits expected by 2025.
Okay, that's do you know what you see there? I talk about downtrends, I keep banging on about this, it's very important because we're in a bear market, you're really worried about this. But you see there, you know, a low and a higher low. You got a high, and you want to break that high, but it's broken the 200 moving average. So you could say that probably is the bottom there. It's
Biovictrix.
Is something going wrong with Lauren's keyboard? Is that the way they spell their name?
Yes, that is the way they spell their name. It's a sort of preclinical. It's a model. It's a test for sort of chemotherapy.
Okay.
Proves pretty successful, so they can sort of move it forward to human trials.
Wow. Okay. So that's in the chemotherapy. That's the same similar sort of area as Avacta.
As Avacta, yeah.
So what's different about theirs then?
Now you're getting into science, and as I mentioned the other day, this is where BVX, it gets a bit woolly for me.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's look at the chart here. That's only 8 million market. Wow, what's up in the chart there? There's nothing there. That is really low liquidity there. You can see the bittiness of the chart.
Yeah, but,
It's. I wouldn't say it's so far it's gone to plan, according to their chart.
They're
kind of, what's that? 150 quid or 15 quid? No, is it down to what? 12 pence? Is that right? Wow. There we are. So how much cash do they have? Because, of course, doing clinical trials and all that is not... doesn't come cheap, does it?
No, that's sort of interim results were out in mid-September.
1.9 they had, but they had bolstered by post-period-end R&D tax credit. So 30th of June, 1.9.
Yeah, about two and a half.
Oh, yeah, successful placing, 2.1. Okay, all right. Anyway, but quickly, let's look quickly how much they tend to... let's look at the operating loss, 1.3. Okay, all right.
Yeah, steady.
Anything else worth looking at? And Paul's covered Oncommune, strategy shift there. That's had a bit of a nightmare,
There's a lot going on here. It does seem like there are picks and shovels in again, sort of for the biopharma industry. And I generally like those kind of companies. It does look like they've put a lot of the foundations in place, and now it's just it's really sort of getting in shape, sharpening the strategy, taking costs out of business. I think they've sort of pared the ball back a bit. Big market opportunities, but it's just about being in shape to deliver against them, which is what today's news was all about.
Yeah, and just keeping it simple. Again, look at that 200 moving average. It hasn't touched it since what, November 21.
Mm.
But now maybe, but it hasn't had any sort of got this sort of line here in the sand. Maybe hopefully 14 and a half pence, 14 or 15 pence. So
shares are up 10% today. So welcome news.
80 energy is normally most red, or it is in the most red there. What's the shares doing? What are they doing?
They're chilling in Alaska, aren't they?
And
it's all plodding along nicely.
Yeah. Okay. Let's look at some of the comments here. So let's see. I'm long-term bullish. So Elsen said bearish until U.S. interest rate decision in November. We need to know if interest rates will remain high or if a pause is coming. Okay. I'm long-term bullish, but no idea about short-term. Yeah, exactly. Mm. Well, that's the market, you see. Long-term bullish. But, I think conserve a bit of cash. Don't go yet. Wait till this is the whites of the bull market's eyes. That's what you do.
I am feeling that there are opportunities out there now. We spoke the other day about, companies have had profit warnings and, looking back. And I remember I said, I think my instinct takes me toward leisure. Leisure is where there might be, something that sort of comes back. And then lo and behold, restaurant group today. So, there is that potential to miss the big bounces in certain sectors, certain companies when they come.
Yeah, I like that. By the way, Steve says, I'm bullish, but finding quality companies, particularly on AIM, is becoming more and more difficult. Yeah, but it should become easier, really, because just wait for the problem. In fact, it's a good analogy here. Paul says, I'm bearish, like a grizzly wondering when the next salmon is coming upstream. That there is almost like a profit warning analogy, isn't it? It's almost like the bear is waiting there. As soon as that salmon jumps out, it's amazing. That's a company being taken down by the bear when you reveal yourself, reveal your results or trading updates. Bullish on quality over valued stocks like they have in the US. Bearish on AIM companies have been riding the gravy train. I would like to ride the gravy train. I want something with the gravy. If you're on the train and they just say, would you like to the gravy? Anything else with your gravy? Would you like some gravy with your gravy? Chips and gravy is lovely. I love that. What else? Anyone subscribing to AIM's VCTs over the next 6 months?
We looked at the VCTs for a while.
Have you heard about fractional? Apparently, the HMRC has been going around. The HMRC are clamping down or looking to clamp down on a loophole in your ISA about holding fractional shares. They're trying to get a loophole in there. Because a lot of companies have been set up now, trading companies like Trading 212 and I think Free Trade. Certain companies like Warren Buffett's vehicle, Berkshire Hathaway, they're like $100,000 for one share, something ridiculous. So you can buy fractional shares, but you can't hold them in your ISA. I don't know if you can hold American companies in your ISA. So they're going to clamp down on that. Oh, you can. Okay.
Yeah. But I don't know if you can hold them fractionally.
Average recession is 5 quarters, not hit the first yet. No, average recession. In fact, I'll put the stats up tomorrow. I'll fund the stats tomorrow. But it's around about 18 months, a year to 18 months. And I've got them. In fact, I'll show you a chart here, okay? And this is the S&P 500. This is exactly, I've actually annotated it on a chart to show you. And this is from 1929 data. There's the indices. This is the S&P 500. Let me scroll down there. So here we are. So average is without recession is 12 months. 16 months was the average with recession. 16 months. That would be July, essentially. And we're beyond that. It's just there. We're beyond that, but we haven't dropped as much as that. But that's the drop. It would have been in 2007-82 in the S&P, and it's way above that. Yes. Like I said, we're past now July there. So that is in July, isn't it? So we're beyond the average duration. I mean, they're not in a bear market anymore, but they were S&P. But the aim is way shot over that. And that's going back. That's the S&P going back to data from 1928. I think it's 2029. So there we are. So where do you get your stats from, Stevie boy? Anything else? Bullish on individual companies, less so on the general market. Yeah, that's it. It's a market of stocks. It's stock market. And that's why sometimes, you know, John said there's certain sectors that have been dragged down willy-nilly, you know, wholesale. And yet there are companies within those sectors that are doing very well. So you've got to find those. I'm bullish on finding quality companies. Yeah, particularly in AIM. I'm bearish. You said that. Sorry.
I mean, I see what was interesting today. I mean, it's got sort of on that idea that, you know, not all companies in specific sectors are created equal. So we had Norman Broadbent, which I haven't really looked at much before. But, we talked about Robert Walters and Page and sort of difficulties within the recruitment sector. Well, Norman Broadbent does executive recruitment, isn't it? Had a lovely update today. Really nice numbers.
It doesn't. The trouble is, it's quite. Let me just find it. Norman Broadbent. What is it about recruitment? They have to use their names, like Robert Walters, Norman Broadbent. You know,
Michael Page.
Michael Page. Yeah, what is it about that? What is it?
this is really nice growth here. Really nice growth.
Yes. Yes. Michael Page would like to. Norman Broadbent. I don't know if I trust someone called Norman Broadbent.
He's a very trustworthy name.
He's meant to, I suppose. Yeah.
But yeah, revenues up 60% in Q3.
You've got to be careful. Be careful. That's very illiquid. You're talking about average volume on that. 603 shares.
Yeah, it is very liquid. But the point is that the trading performance stands, you know, in contrast to what we've heard from other recruiters.
Yeah, that is 36 quid a day. that is the average volume. That is so careful.
I mean, this again is the other problem with it. This is
and the spread. Look at the spread on that. Five and a half to seven. That's a big percentage spread, isn't it? So you got to be careful on that.
So I mean, you know, someone mentioned yesterday on Twitter that, you know, we talked about strategic minerals and, you know, there was a big, you know, sort of on the face of it, a big jump in the share price, but then the spread was massive.
And
this is a problem. This is a problem across a lot of companies on AIM. It's just, you know, the volume isn't there. And it, you know, it means you get this chopping around.
I'm always amazed by, I still don't know some companies listed. You know, we've been doing this for like 300 days a year, covering 10 companies a day, pretty much, of more than that. And there's still companies out there I've never heard of. I mean, I've, of course, heard of Vasari, and they talk about here. There's a general meeting update here. There's a bit of a car crash, but...
it's a car crash. I mean, they don't seem to be able to raise money. Yeah.
They're selling assets, of course. There can be no certainty the sales will be satisfactory concluded before the existing capital is exhausted. That is it's quite a brutal term, that exhausted.
But they couldn't raise money because the nominal value of the share, I'd say the value of the shares on the market had fallen below the nominal value of the shares on the company's register of 1p. So they have to have big share reorganisations to get out of this pickle. Safe Style, you know, go down the bottom. You know, I mean...
Fallers.
You know what's happening here. This is a crunch for this company.
And
this is where I think that the sentiment is poor and reflects the troubles in the economy.
This example, have you ever heard of Alna Holdings?
Alina, no.
Exactly. What do they do? They're 1.7 million. That's probably what happened. There's a suspension lifted.
It's suspension.
Okay. All right. Okay.
There's been a lot of suspensions recently.
This is in May, though. So I don't know why. I don't know what's happened there.
Well, it might have come back from. No, it can't have done.
No.
How strange. Lots of companies were suspended earlier this year because they didn't get their accounts out in time.
Okay. Do you know what's interesting? Card Factory, you often get, like I said, if you think you're getting into something, you know, in this environment, just wait for the results, because you may think that cracking results is coming. But you've had a good example here of Card Factory. It's had a very good run up here. You know, that's a very powerful jump, you know, from this the lows here. Again, without breaking the 200 moving average, previous highs as well, breaking previous highs. In fact, you say these are previous highs, getting there, and it's rallied nice and strongly. And then you get this, you know, congestion zone. Mm. It touches the 200 moving average. We're saying, why would it do that? It hasn't done that since back here in November 2022. And since the results, look at that, results. It came down 11% pretty much. And since then, it's gone down again. And so it's almost like the expectation of the results is better than the reality, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you're struggling there. But there is some support around here. These two levels of support, sort of 84 and 90 pence. So,
What struck me today, Oxford Instruments, we've had some, you know, mentions of quality. Oxford Instruments is undoubtedly a very, very high quality company. Makes scientific instruments, basically. And, it's trading update out today. It's not shockingly bad, but, you know, results are going to be, four-year trading is going to be at the lower end of expectations. And that's been enough to knock the shares 5.5%. You know, the shares are not cheap. They were sort of 20 times, 19 times forecast earnings. So a lot of this, and, you know, they're pointing to the macroeconomic difficulties. So, as I say, that economic weakness is filtering through into to trading. And actually something like Oxford Instruments, despite its quality, is, you know, you're paying up for that. And you've then got the valuation risk alongside, you know, the sort of trading risk.
Looks
nasty. That's a nasty looking chart.
I tell you, trying to rally today, you know, it's a fund manager's dream is Diageo, 52 week low, but, you know, big quality company. Mm. You see here, it's trying to get above this. Well, it sort of is almost above this sort of support level. It'd be interesting to see if this is the bottom now for Diageo, because it's too early yet to say. But it's interesting. Steve is quoting all kind of stats here. Steve, we can argue back and forth stats till we're blue in the eye, but when you think about it, the market has changed massively up there over the last 10, 20 years with electronic trading, with internet and all that stuff. So it's hard to base historical, you know, recessions, or this is the one we're going to have, or maybe going to have, on previous ones. But all you can say, if you look back at the most recent one, which was, on AIM, for example, the Great Financial Crash. I mean, you know, that was a big, serious issue, wasn't it? You know, when banks were actually going through, and it didn't last as long as this one. Like I said, if we get this and say, you know, from the top to the bottom, we got 765 days down 47%. Now, if you scroll back to the previous one, which was like 2009, look at that. The top there, in fact, double top almost, and to the bottom. Oh, that's 1,036 days from there actually.
It's going to be a year.
But that is, I mean, you could say the most recent high in 2007. In fact, it didn't start in 2006, though, did we? It was like 2007 was when the crash crashed. 2007 to the bottom was less.
Well, it was 2008, technically speaking, September 2008 when.
Yeah, well the high.
But the NERS were framed before then.
Yeah, I mean.
You'd had Northern Rock already go bust.
Yeah. So I think 2007, you know, July 2007 is when they started saying the credit crunch. Everyone was talking about that. Mm. That was like, that was 70% though, but it was faster because, of course, you got the central bank saying, we're going to bail out some banks.
Very different cycle. I mean, you know, the interest rate environment, the backdrop is completely different now. And I'd say the scope for stimulus is so much more limited now.
Yeah, I keep looking back at this. When was the bottom? Even AIM, look. AIM broke the 50-day moving average on January the 9th, okay? First of all, the first time it's done that in, what, over a year or something. Mm. And then it came back down, broke below it again, but broke above it again. And then that's where you go, look. Previous high there. And so you could say, we're out of it. April 2009, pretty much, you're not at the bottom. No one gets the bottom, apart from John with his bell and cashmere vest. and then it started rising above there 200 day on May the 9th. But we are currently, you know, the thing. In fact, quickly, let's scroll down here to this news. I don't know if you saw this. This is interesting. We've seen that. Official figures, GDP, boring. But High interest rates, this is from, you know, a member of the Monetary Policy Committee. She says, the economy so far, we think only 20 to 25% of the impact of the interest rates hikes have been fed through the economy so far. And she's on the you know, the Bank of England Monetary Policy Committee. So it is quite worrying. If they know that, and of course they do know that, then if the jobs start taking a big hit and everything starts ticking down, they will step in, I think. They'll have to step in because people losing jobs is very important, left, right and centre. And again, challenging markets for houses, of course. But by contrast, the rental property market is running hot with Rick's demand balance at plus 43, whereas the price is minus 68 for selling houses. Plus 43. Listings were also down, reflecting the lack of available properties.
By so, landlords pulling out of the market.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. The higher interest rates are sort of one problem, but it was already getting difficult for landlords before that. Anyway, yeah. You know, the sort of ever rising amounts of regulation.
And the
fact that you can't mortgage costs are not tax deductible for landlords. So the tax burden on landlords becomes so onerous that they're retreating from the market. And of course, the unintended consequence is that there's nowhere for anyone to live who can't afford to buy a house.
And what's the worrying thing is, you know, core inflation, which the Bank of England looks at, like I said, including that is rent. Mm. And so rent is going up because there's lack of supply. And of course, there's lots of demand. That's, you know, economics 101. And yet that's including core inflation. So if they keep putting up interest rates, it'll be a negative impact on core inflation, or, you know, a positive impact means it goes up. So they've got to be careful with all that. So it's a fine line. It's a really blunt instrument, isn't it? Like a caveman with a baton. Yeah. That's interest rates, a blunt instrument for inflation, but it's all they have, really, apart from QT. And,
indeed. We've heard some interesting stuff in the Labour Party conference this week. I don't want to go too much into politics, but, you know, the areas where they're focusing, housing is one of them, and Keir Starmer talked about building new towns.
Yeah, do you know what, though? Let me just say one thing, okay? I'm not a Conservative. I literally would go, I probably voted Conservative more times than I voted Labour. But I was listening to an interview by a house builder. I can't think of the company name. But he was saying it's a welcome that they are going to build new houses, but this new towns concept is not new and it takes decades. He's better off focusing on small developments that can be done in high quality, you know, affordable, rather than going for new towns. He said new towns will take 20 years to do. So that's, you know, it's not viable. And they probably won't be in power when it actually comes to fruition. So what you need to focus on. So what I thought then, there's a lot of hot air there from Keir Starmer. It's very easy to make promises, isn't it? Saying, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to fix that. Every mistake they've made, we're going to make it better. But when you actually come to do it in power, like new towns, from a guy who builds houses, says it's not doable. It's not
the problem. The problem there is that if you're a small scale developer, you're not going to build social houses. You're going to build ones that you could sell for as much money as possible. I think small scale development should be encouraged, and the industry has, you know, made it. It's become very difficult for smaller builders. The conditions don't very much favour the volume house builders. So there needs to be a grand, ambitious plan because there is a significant housing shortage.
But that's the problem with Boris, though. He used to bring out these stupid, you know, ideas everyone sort of loved. It's the same old thing. It's the same thing with a rampy CEO of an AIM company. Mm. Everyone loves them, then it falls apart and collapses.
Well, if you remember Vistry...
It's got to be achievable, you know?
Vistry, the house builder, said it's going full social housing. So,
yeah.
And I know that there's been some sort of kickback against that strategy by some analysts who deem it unworkable. But you know what? They built new towns once before. It has been done.
Already the infrastructure and the amount of new towns are huge. Just, I mean, you realise it does take, like the guy said, minimum 10 years, probably around about 20 years.
We've talked a lot about short versus long-term thinking and, you know... sometimes you've got to think long term. Multi-generational.
Yeah, you're convinced by Keir. You're convinced by Keir there.
It's the kind of thing I've often thought myself. You know, and as I said, Wes Streeting, you know, talking about modernising the NHS, he's absolutely correct. And, you know, I said that Keir Starmer should have been listening. Actually, it was Wes Streeting, but it was listening, you know, talking about, you know, we've got an analogue health service in a digital age and that needs to change. And actually, if you look at if you look at one of the big rises today, it's a company we talked about yesterday, Induction Healthcare.
Up 27.5% today.
Yeah, but they've had a nightmare, haven't they? Induction. They have,
but like, you know, this is not very, you know, the chart is the same as most AIM companies. But, you know, these big NHS, these contracts that they're winning, them and other companies, are key to delivering a vision of a digital health service, which is what we need. So,
yeah. Again, it's got to be digital, because, of course, everything, and, you know, you can. The data you generate from that can be looked at more closely. A lot of it is, how much is this? So Labour is just criticising, they've made this mistake, we'll fix this. When it actually comes down to it, and they won't have a lot of wiggle room. You know, the government hasn't got a lot of budget.
Bear in mind, if you use digital technology to modernise the NHS, you actually save money. So, yeah. You know, yes, there may be some upfront capital costs, but it's not even, you know, that significant. You know, look at companies like Cuth, for example. Big focus on mental health in West Street Speech. Cuth is now brilliantly positioned.
He mentioned Cuth, did he?
No, he did not mention Cuth. He mentioned mental health. but we know that, you know, Cuth, the service that it offers, potentially, say, you know, it alleviates the burden on the NHS. It solves a problem and potentially saves the health service money. So, mm-hmm. I think you've got to think big at the moment.
Yeah. I wonder if it's a lady out there called Anna Log. Anyway, by all means, hit that like button if you could. Subscribe if you haven't, and share it. And that's it for today. Thank you for tuning in. You can catch on the podcast, but you can't see the charts. Though. You can't see John's puffer jacket on the podcast. So John is live on YouTube. And yes, and same time, same place tomorrow, but with different kind of news and different kind of market. That's what makes it interesting. Cheers, John. Speak to you tomorrow.
See you later.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.